Startups with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to episode number 108 of Robots. I am Jana, and today we'll be hearing from Andra Key from Robot Launchpad to get an inside view of the robotics startup scene at Silicon Valley. But first, as always, here is the news with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and MIT have used the 3D printer RepRap, which you may remember from our previous reports, to create networks of blood vessels. Creating such networks is a key milestone for the creation of lab-grown organs out of a patient's own cells. To create the vascular network, the researchers first printed a support structure. They then printed the desired network of blood vessels out of sugar by pulling sugar filaments at different speeds until they reached the desired thickness of blood vessels. Once the sugar hardened, the researchers added liver cells suspended in a gel, encasing the blood vessel network. In a final step, the resulting block of liver cells was washed with water to remove the sugar, leaving the network of blood vessels in place. First experiments show that pumping nutrients or blood through the network can indeed sustain the liver cells. Eventually, they hope to use their quick and inexpensive method to make implantable organs for animal studies. For more information on creating blood vessel networks, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Robot Launchpad is a volunteer-led endeavor trying to create new robot businesses, grow new technologies, and use startup techniques to influence human-robot culture. The Launchpad volunteers are currently building a robot community that connects robotics to the startup world, the business and design worlds, the creative communities, and many other fields. Andra Key has a background in human-robot interaction and is part of the Robot Launchpad volunteer corps. She talked to our reporter Sabine about startup events organized by Robot Launchpad in April, lean startup methodology, minimum viable products, and the importance of women in science.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome to Robots.
Hi, Sabine.
Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm Andra Key. I'm the founder of Robot Launchpad. That's a startup whose product is an idea. And the idea is that robots and startups really go together, and that the startup is a really pertinent and timely way for robotics to grow and flourish in a whole range of new directions.
And in general, what aspects of robotics are you interested in?
I have a very broad interest in robotics. I just finished studying human-robot culture as my master's area. So I've been interested in robotics in the very inception stages, not robotics at the final product, but in how robotics grows and develops and which directions it takes. One of the things that I have heard at every conference I've been to in the last few years is, I have this really great robot product, but I can't get it built. I tried launching a business. There are a lot of barriers to the growth of robotics, and a lot of people in robotics are waiting for I hate the phrase, but they're waiting for the killer app to come along. And that's not really how the process works in the software and computing space. And there are a lot of people that compare where robotics is now to where the personal computer was 20 years ago. And they say, right, the time is right now for robotics. But it's still an expensive hardware-based industry. And there certainly are barriers for robotics businesses. But with the rise of the smartphone as an interface with robotic platforms. With the rise of off-the-shelf consumer products that are applicable to robots like the Kinect sensor, and there is a raft of really great sensors that are being made cheaper by their relevance to other industries, other huge industries like gaming and the automotive industry. And they're applicable to robotics. And this, for me, this democratizing of technology that is happening, where once something reaches a certain price point, it is accessible to a wider range of people than it was at the price point before. And the wider range of people that have access to the technology creates a much bigger pool of possible uses, and that allows for a wide range of business models. When you are inventing something, you tend to have one or two use cases in your mind, and often they're scenarios that suit your personal experience. Now, the idea behind the democratizing of technology is that by crowdsourcing the potential customer pool and business models for a technology to the broadest possible reach, you create thousands of business models, not just the one or two scenarios that the person who is creating the technology initially has access to.
You've been greatly involved with all these startups with Robot Launchpad, and I wanted you to tell us a bit about some of the events that you've been involved in.
Yes, April has just been a fantastic month for robotics. I know in America we've had the National Robotics Week, but for me it's been the entire month, absolutely jam-packed with robot goodness. And it has been a great way of validating some of the assumptions that I've made about Robot Launchpad, which is that robotics is ready to grow through startups and through using lean startup methodology. I've been involved in four different events in the last month, and each one of them has involved a slightly different group of people for a different purpose, but it's all been exploring the notion of how do we bootstrap and jet propel robotics through startup culture.
What is lean startup methodology?
Lean startup methodology is applying science to business. I love it. It's also applying a lot of anthropology to business and technology. So I doubly love lean startup methodology. One of the things that lean startup methodology is rapidly becoming the primary methodology, particularly in the Silicon Valley area, and I think any area where startups are flourishing. It's come out of the school of customer validation started by Frank Robinson and continued by Steve Blank, who has been lecturing at Stanford for a very long time, is a serial entrepreneur himself. And that the genesis there in books like Steve Blank's Four Steps to the Epiphany and most recently his Startup Owner's Manual really started a big discussion around looking at business scientifically and accepting that a startup is not a business. A startup is a very, very different beast. A startup does not use a business plan because a startup does not know who the customer is or indeed what the product is. And we've seen this very clearly in the computing, software, and internet space. It is comparatively cheap sometimes to get a hugely successful business off the ground. And there are many opportunities to test your assumptions about who your customer is and what your product is, and develop metrics to assess whether or not you're making the right decisions as you go. And this can involve using things like A-B testing, rolling out, let's take an example of a massive online game. If you make changes for half of your players, but not the other half, and then you track their engagement in the game, how many hours they're spending, are they buying more in-game items, are you getting more referrals from this group? You can see if one group is flourishing and the other group is declining, then whatever you changed, you can assess, was that the success point or was that a fail? And there is a lot of work going into developing metrics around testing your assumptions around what you're doing with a business and doing it really quickly, because businesses are expensive, particularly, say, a robotics or hardware-based one. Every day that you're not generating income or cash flow, you are losing money. And it says test your riskiest assumptions first, test fast, iterate.
So did any other events happen this month?
We started the month with joining the Cloud Robotics Hackathon, which was a global endeavor, and I organized the Silicon Valley chapter, you would say. And that was a whole weekend devoted to building robots that were utilizing cloud services and communicating through the cloud. And like many hackathons, it was very, very much about, let's build the robot, let's get the robot working, let's fix this, let's get this talking to something else. And although the goal was explicitly to create an innovative use scenario for a robot in the cloud, and I would argue that people could have won that hackathon simply by presenting an idea with no robot at all. We were all too busy building robots, and quite often the idea of what we were going to do with them got lost, and it became, I'm going to make my robot talk to the cloud. I'm going to get this fixed. I'm going to get this working. And the people who do create good businesses are the ones who've actually found customers. So for me, this is what I stress all the way through. It's not enough to build a robot. You have to find a customer. And so the hackathon was our first event. And as said, I've got this assumption that you can launch a robot business without necessarily having a robot in front of you. And that I really want to explore the process for what's the minimum viable product for a robotics business to get started. And I'll return to the idea of minimum viable robot product, but I'll just summarize the events of this month, because after the Cloud Robotics Hackathon, of course, we moved into National Robot Week, and I organized the Silicon Valley Robot Block Party at Stanford. This is the third year this event's run. It is massive, and unfortunately, I wasn't in America for the other two. I've only been here for a year, and it was a chance for me to meet so many robot businesses in the area, whether they're the established industry leaders like Adept and Bosch and Willow Garage and Intuitive and Stanford Research International. So many of the companies that are already established in the field, but I also met a lot of new robot startups who've been only existing for, you know, a year or less. And I think that there are so many more out there that I didn't meet. In the 2 weeks before the block party actually started, I was getting a phone call or an email every day from somebody else saying, oh, I've just heard that the block party is on, from someone else that I know who's going, and I've got this robot company that I've just started, and we do this and such, can I come to the block party? And I'm like, yes, well, we love this. We really ended up with three themed areas, one which was for established industries, one which was for robot clubs and education, and that's ranging from the Tech Museum to AUVSI to several of the groups who do STEM with robotics, like Playing with Learning, and the Homebrew Robotics Club. And the third area, which was really our startup area, so we have people like Marek from BeatBots with the Keepon. We have El Adinbar from the Robot App Store. We had Ninth Sense, Bar Robo. We had Ninja Blocks. I'm maybe not so good with the names just right now, but we had a wonderful range of robot startups, and I'm looking forward to initiatives like Silicon Valley Robotics and the Silicon Valley Robot Block Party at Stanford as providing a showcase for not just Silicon Valley's established robotics industry, but for the up-and-coming startups. Where Robot Launchpad comes in is that we want to make it easier for robot startups to get started. We can see there are really a lot of great opportunities in the area, but there are still a lot of obstacles for getting a robot startup up and running. Now, the other events, and this is pertinent, is straight after the Robot Block Party, I organized robots as a vertical at Mega Startup Weekend, and that was massive. It was a great experience. Mega Startup Weekend is very much at the core of startup culture. It's about coming together to build startups and doing it in 54 hours. And I have been saying, we can do this for robotics as well. And I've been talking over the last 6 months to Startup Weekend organizers about whether or not we can do something that is hardware-based, because this is traditionally something in the specifically software and mobile space. And we took a risk with it. This is the largest showcase for Startup Weekend, and we said, let's add robots. It was a great success, and it's excited a lot of people well beyond the robotics community about what the potential for robot startups is just now. So I'll talk a little bit more about that, but I'll just finish by saying the final event, the one that we had on the weekend just past, was the Robot Retreat, and that was a smaller, much more, I would say, a high-level weekend. And although we were open to people developing a robot business idea over the weekend, and we did encourage it, and we did have a few ideas, some really crazy and some really like, oh, there's a lot of possibility there coming out of the weekend, we were all ultimately more concerned with writing a roadmap for robot startups, identifying where the similarities were, how lean startup methodology could apply, and where things need to be refined a little bit more, and understanding what the state of the robotics profession is in terms of having access to this information about how to build a startup and how we can grow that further. One of the things that everybody may be aware of is that Stanford, as just one of the universities that is teaching engineers entrepreneurship. I mean, Steve Blank and Ravi Balani are just some of the really great instructors who are teaching lean startup methodology there. And so the future of robotics seems to be about adding entrepreneurship. And if you're currently at university, you might be well serviced already in terms of having access to that information and great opportunities to practice it. If you're not, though, if you're already working in the industry, I believe there is a gap. And I've certainly heard people expressing this at conferences over the last few years. I wanted to test methods of delivering access to the information and chances to practice it to people in robotics. One of the things that I'm aware of in the other startup spaces is that it is all right to fail. And in fact, it's often necessary that you have to have an attitude of being a serial entrepreneur. And what I do see in robotics is people tend to try a company once, and if it doesn't work out, then they have many opportunities to move back into the large robotics industry. I believe there are plenty of jobs out there right now. So the encouragement to continue as an entrepreneur and to keep trying ideas, it's there are too many barriers and there is not enough incentive. I'm about trying to remove some of the barriers, and as more robot companies grow and succeed, I think we will see the incentives to do that. It is the right time for startups now. The methodology to make it less risky is being developed, and that's the lean startup methodology based on customer validation. And the way that people are investing in companies and businesses is changing. We're seeing the rise of accelerators, both within enterprises and outside. The Robot Launchpad is, in fact, rapidly becoming an accelerator itself. We're not directly providing funding to robot startups, but we're certainly moving into a position where we're providing introductions to venture capital firms and angel investors, and we're developing a good conversation between people who invest in robotics and between people who want to grow robot startups. But we're still very early stages. We're growing rapidly, and now is definitely the right time for startups. Startup America is, for example, is a government-funded initiative to grow startups, and they explicitly have a three-year finite funding period. They're 1 year into it. They have two more years to grow startups by connecting experts, by providing learning and training, by creating events that connect investors to startups, and doing all of those sort of things. We're very, very small compared to Startup America, but Startup America, the Kauffman Foundation, Microsoft, Google, there are a lot of large companies that are looking at fostering the growth of small startups as the healthiest way, not just to grow the economy generally, but to create research and development.
So who is involved in this robot launchpad effort?
We have a wonderful group of advisors and a strong core group, which is myself, Erin Rapaki, who's currently the mobile product manager at Adept Robotics, Michael Harries, who's running a technology accelerator for Citrix. And the Citrix Startup Accelerator has nothing to do with robotics. Their primary area is cloud, software as a service, and mobile technology. And yet, there are starting to be overlaps in the areas of mobile technology and cloud and software as a service with robotics, but primarily Michael is involved because he used to be involved in robotics and machine learning, and he went over to the dark side, but he was impatient and didn't want to stick with robotics. He wanted to be involved in an industry that had a global reach and was changing the world. We're now very interested in how close cloud technologies and robotics are getting. And finally, Ahmed Siddiqui is the Silicon Valley Startup Weekend organizer. And early on in my discussions, when I'm pitching the robot launchpad idea to people, they say, so how would you do this? And I'm saying, well, I think Startup Weekend offers a really good model for testing robot business ideas, testing them really quickly with minimum investment. And they've established a process for doing that in a 54-hour period where strangers come together to create new businesses. And I think you can do that with robots.
About what type of projects people are coming up with? What are the next robot startups?
Many robot startups will disappear seamlessly into other technologies. We're not going to say, oh, hey, that's a robot or that's robotic. It is just going to make our life easier. My car will drive itself. I am not going to call my car a robot, but that's robotic technology. There are many places that will be happening. There is also the whole big field of industrial and enterprise robotics, which we often don't think about when we're creating products or when we're creating ideas for what is a robot going to be or where is the future of robotics. One that's making the rounds at the moment in the news is the Tarcocopter, where you work out that a quadcopter can actually carry a very small payload and can travel a certain distance, and that's ideal for the delivery of a small hot snack to somebody. Now, the downside with this in the United States is that it's a commercial use of an air vehicle, and that's prohibited. That might be changing, but that's probably not till 2015. So that's an idea that will probably succeed in other countries, not in the United States. Another use of quadcopters or other aerial robots is in air filtration and dusting, which is perhaps very pertinent for people with allergies and asthma. And I think that there is a lot of potential there. We're so used to vacuum cleaners being something that go along the ground. So the idea of having airborne vacuum cleaners, that could develop into a real game changer.
What do you tell to people who want to make a flying vacuum cleaner? What's their roadmap?
There are a number of ways that you can go about doing it, but first and foremost is keeping in mind that you need to have a customer. You need to find customers, and you need to deliver a robot product that is meeting their needs. And you can't just say, I've got this really cool idea that I'm pretty certain that there are people who will want it.
Is that the biggest challenge that startups have, or are there other ones in robotics?
Ultimately, I think that finding a customer is the biggest problem that robotics have. And ultimately, I think that finding a customer is the single biggest problem that robot startups have. In fact, the robotics industry, perhaps more generally. But it doesn't mean that there aren't customers. There are. The world is wide open, waiting for robots that are doing things that we want to pay for.
And you mentioned investors before. Are there a lot of them? Do they really want to fund robotics, and is this growing?
Yes, we're certainly seeing a lot of interest. We're starting to get venture capital firms coming to our events, and the conversations are starting, and angel investors as well. What we need to do is be aware of what is the best choice. What is the best choice at any stage for a robotic startup? What area are they moving into? How much money do they need to survive the next 18 months? Where is the best partnership for them? Because you don't just get money. You get the investor as well. You get a board member. You get somebody who is going to affect the future direction of your company. And you need to make sure that it's the best possible partnership that you can have. People think that getting investments in robotics is hard. It was hard 5 and 10 years ago. I don't believe it's as hard right now. I think that the moment you can demonstrate that you have a business model with real customers, that you've got a robot product that has real customers, that is meeting a problem or a need that real people have, and that they are already demonstrating an interest in what you're doing and a willingness to pay for it, the moment you can show that there is a return on investment, then you will have investors. And indeed, Stephen Humphreys gave a fantastic talk at the Robot Retreat weekend, and he's been involved in Giraffe Technologies, who moved from the United States to Sweden. One of the things that he was pointing out is that robotics is an attractive area for investors. There are certain business models that make a lot of sense, and these are ones that we don't always think about when we're thinking about a robot startup. And those areas are involved in leasing, creating service industries, repurposing existing robotic platforms. There is a lot of scope for extending our understanding of what a robot business model is. It certainly shouldn't just be, I'm building a robot and now I want to sell it. We know there are difficulties with that. We know that it's capital intensive, and we know that the margins are very low. These are things that investors are not particularly keen on. It doesn't mean, though, that they're not interested in funding a hardware product. But there is certainly a lot of interest in splitting some of the risks in doing leasing models and creating service industries and creating new business models around robot platforms that somebody else is building, where your business model is simply purchasing an existing robot and having your business built on top of that. So you've got a robot business. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily building the robot. And that's why I think the key to this, no matter what business model you're selecting, no matter what market segment you're looking at, and no matter what country you're going into, you have to find a customer.
You mentioned before the minimal product robot. I think you have to tell me the term again. Can you explain what that was?
The robot MVP, the minimum viable product, is a term from Lean Startup Methodology, which says, how little can I build to test my assumptions about who my customers are, what they want this product to be doing, and how much they're willing to pay for it, and how quickly perhaps my market share can grow, and what my retention rate for my customers is. And that's seen the rise of things like launch pages, where you don't actually build your web service, you simply, or your hardware product, you simply build a sign-up sheet on the internet. You start attracting people to it within your predicted market segment, and you then see who does actually go to the trouble of saying, yes, let me know when you launch. Let me know when you do this. I might even be interested in making a preliminary commitment to purchase your $5 app or your $50 product when you come out. And Kickstarter is another example of that kind of thing. With Kickstarter, you're crowdsourcing your financing, but you're also finding out, do you have a market? If your project on Kickstarter attracts enough funds, then you go and you make it. But what you're doing first off is you're finding, are there 30,000 people that think that your idea is really cool? And are they willing to pay $20 to just get the t-shirt in support? Or are they actually willing to pay $99 to get the product that you're selling? Or are they so keen that they're actually going to buy the 5-pack for $450? So you start testing who your customers are and how much they're willing to pay.
I know you've been very proactive in including women in the robotics field efforts as well. Do you think more needs to be done to motivate women to work in robotics and become entrepreneurs?
I think as long as you don't have an even split of women and men in any field, whether it's finance, whether it's politics, whether it's robotics, as long as there is not an even representation, then more needs to be done. I think for me that just is a fundamental principle. And that applies to every section of the population that is underrepresented. I think that we need to be aware all the time of underrepresentation and make small steps to improve that, whatever we do. Now, on that topic, I think there are many fabulous and amazing women in the technology field, particularly in robotics. And they serve as great role models. But what I think is important is it's not women's job to change representation. I often hear, because it's important for women to be role models, they kind of get landed with every aspect of the let's promote women in robotics and let's encourage women to be in robotics. And the most powerful thing that I've recently seen was when a young man who was a venture capitalist, an investor, and a judge at Startup Weekend just lightly questioned the use of women in a pitch that was done in the mobile phone vertical, and whether or not it was actually pertinent to the product to have bikini-wearing women used to demonstrate a mobile phone application. The fact that it was a man speaking out, I think, gave the discussion much greater relevance to everyone there, and it reminded us all that it is simply a case of respect and welcoming. And I realized just this morning that I believe that act is probably the most significant, simple, small step that can be taken to make the technology field more hospitable to women. It's something that I would encourage men to do at every opportunity. Just one little statement of welcome or of acknowledgement. The issue of gender and technology is very complex, is very large, but that's a whole nother discussion. And I realized today that this is quite similar to in Australia, the Indigenous people have a reconciliation process that our whole country has agreed to participate in. And frequently that is simply prefacing events and occasions with a sentence that acknowledges that the Indigenous population are here and have a right to be here. And I realize that that is, at the heart of it, what I think is the most useful way of making technology environment hospitable and fruitful for all of us. And let me say, this is not simply about social justice. I believe that if women are not involved, we are missing 50% of the workforce, we are missing 50% of the customer base, we're missing 50% of the brain power, we're missing 50% of the money, where it is just a waste, honestly. You know, it is a waste. So I am all for encouraging more representation of women across the board until we have equal representation. And I think the simplest way to do it is for everybody to recognize what is an underrepresented section of the community and make a statement of welcome. Oh, it's good to see so many women in the room here today. Thank you.
Just to wrap up, can you tell us very briefly about your future projects?
I'm really excited about the future for the Robot Launchpad. We've been invited to run events pretty much all over the world just right now. We're having discussions with a wide range of groups and companies exploring partnerships, because what we don't want to do is reinvent the wheel. If somebody has an accelerator, if somebody has a training series, if somebody has a special interest group that is meeting regularly and they want to expand their topic to include robotics, or if there's already a meetup that's flourishing that is focusing on hardware startups, then we're not trying to do the same thing. What we're trying to do is make sure that there is a really good quality of discussion around robotics happening in these spaces, and that we're opening up, I guess, the robotics space to the broader entrepreneurial communities, and particularly to share resources and talent and investment. So we're very much about facing outwards for robotics, having the discussion not just within robotics, but with broader communities, and doing that in partnership. So over the next 2 weeks, we're going to be finalizing pretty much a timetable for the next year of what's achievable for the four of us to actually do, given three of them, members of Robot Launchpad, actually have other jobs. So I'm the only person who's devoting my full-time time to Robot Launchpad at the moment. So we need to look at how we can get the most value from some strategically placed events and partnerships. And we think that the key ingredient here is that we're starting from inside robotics, and now what we're doing is looking outside and finding the strategic partnerships to allow robotics to grow and flourish using startups as the growth culture.
Thanks, Sandra, for being here with us on Robots.
Huh. Thank you, Savine. It's been great.
And that concludes today's episode. If you've been inspired to find out more, visit our website at robotspodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Startups with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.